Hello and welcome to Talking Stars, the September edition, where we once again pick our movies that we want to see in September and talk about the ones that we wanted to talk about from August. I am your host, Darren, from Movie Reviews 101, and joining me today is Mr. Sleepyhead himself, Damien Riley from Riley on Film.
Thought he's saying that because I forgot we started an hour earlier today, but they did me a simple favor and waited.
And we'll have none of that today, Damien. And joining us is the Van again from Cinema Recall.
Hello!
Hello.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Good to be here. It's like so a nice pair of like shoes or some well-fitting slippers, you know. They just feel really comfortable, you know. You like it. It's like that and a good cup of coffee, you know. It just feels right.
Very true. So without further ado, we're going to jump straight into our six that we've picked between us. I am going to hand over to Damien for one of the films that he seems to be getting addicted to, these teen horror movies, The House with the Clock in Its Walls.
I was so excited when I saw the preview for this. I thought it looked really great. Sort of reminded me of like Hugo, maybe the word clock made me think of that. And then it sort of looked like a spooky one, creepy one, not you know, not horror creepy, but just fun creepy. And then I saw the Jack Black, one of my favorite actors is in it, and I was convinced that I had to see that film. It looked like a great one. I think he's making really good decisions right now with the films that he's taking, so I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great day out at the movies.
I'm actually kind of surprised that this is directed by Eli Roth.
I did not see that.
Eli Roth is the guy who made the movie like Hostel and The Inferno, and he makes these like really unsettling, gory movies. I think the last movie he did was The Bomb, Death Wish. But I do like a lot of his movies that he does, and this looks like more of a Guillermo del Toro fantasy type movie. I don't know what the rating of this movie is, but it definitely seems to have like some sort of like family aspect of it a little bit there.
Yeah,
like something that like seems to be more like a PG-13 type of vibe to it. Like it's like between a PG-13 and an R. I just found that to be, you know, fascinating there with especially he's got a good cast too with like Kate Blanchett, Jack Black in there. This definitely looks to be like more of a mainstream hit for Mr. Eli Roth. So I'm actually kind of fascinated by this a little bit more knowing that he's making it.
Absolutely, and as I just said, I got kind of a late start on looking at a few of my previews, and I looked over the fact that Eli Roth directed it. I know Darren's a huge fan of Eli Roth, at least old Eli Roth. Darren, where do you stand now on Eli?
If his films actually got released, I may watch them.
Yeah.
I don't think Death Wish had a proper release in the UK because nobody wanted to watch it.
Maybe because I think Death Wish is maybe just like a funding project. A lot of directors, they will just get hired by a studio, and sometimes as a director, you want to keep working so you keep making money to fund projects that you actually like. I'm looking up right now the writers of this one, and one of the writers of this one is a guy named Eric Kripke, and he's basically only been known for doing a lot of like TV series, Supernatural, and that's really about it though. Tarzan series. This is like kind of his first feature. I just like looking up writers of this. I really got nothing else more to say about Dawson the Clash of the Balls. It was good. It was a good kind of horror fantasy thriller. But you can never go wrong with having Academy Award, two-time Academy Award winner Cate Blanchett in your cast.
Oh, yeah. And I think, like, the triangle there, you got Jack Black, Cate Blanchett, Eli Roth. All those people, like, kind of have their own vision for things. And they usually don't, like, buy into, like, the mainstream way of making a movie. I mean, Cate Blanchett played Bob Dylan in a recent movie. I still haven't seen it, but I hear it's pretty amazing. So, as a woman, too, by the way. Played Bob Dylan as a woman.
Imagine her having a sex change to play Bob Dylan and becoming a woman again.
Well, I mean, you'd think that
she's not
anyway,
a Kardashian. No,
I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to talk about it. But just the fact that I think you guys agree, they're all kind of visionary. Mm-hmm. I mean, back at Tenacious D, let's look at that. Nacho Libre for Jack Black. Gulliver's Travels was okay, but he got off track a few times. But I think these three minds together, like if you ever, you know, look at behind-the-scenes footage or pictures when movies are being made, you see the director and the lead actors, they're always looking at the script, you know, talking with each other. So I look at that collaboration as really exciting. I'm glad you brought that up about Eli Roth, because I didn't really know that.
And also, this one also features this new upcoming new young actor named Sonny Suljic, who I've only seen in the movie The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and he's going to be in a new movie called Mid-90s that I haven't seen trailers for, and he's got that other movie, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, but yeah, he's another young actor that I imagine kind of, he's been really good in the roles that I've seen, got the return of Colin Camp. Yeah, this looks like a really good fantasy adventure movie. It's based on the book by John Bellairs. Yeah, I'm actually kind of looking forward to see this one. It looks actually, I'm actually really, I just be surprised that it is an Eli Roth movie, because Eli Roth doesn't really delve into like fantasy horror that much. He mainly does like realistic horror in a way, but this looks really like a stylized fantasy horror, and that looks really kind of good.
See, when I saw
go ahead, Jared.
When I saw the film title and then I saw the very first snippet of a trailer, I thought it was the Goosebumps sequel to start with.
Yeah,
because it, especially when there is a Goosebumps sequel this year with Jack Black in, you can't help but feel that. What? Wait. So you're doing two Goosebumps movies this year? And the stranger thing is the fact that you've got Eli Roth doing what, according to the English rating, is a PG movie.
Yeah.
Where he wouldn't do the Meg when it was going to be PG-13. So, it's, something's changed in his head that he doesn't
want to. Well, that's just a shark movie. Nobody will go see that.
It isn't a shark movie, it's a dinosaur movie.
Okay.
See, there you go.
But this is listed as family, too, we should say. Family, fantasy, horror on IMDb. And so, I hate to say it because, you know, I'm a family man, but that kind of, for a lot of horror fans, I think that's going to take away, you know?
But I don't think this movie should be think of as, like, a horror film. I mean, kind of like Beetlejuice shouldn't be looked at as a horror film. I mean, this looks to be, like, a fantasy, you know, gothic fantasy movie. But I just think it's fascinating the fact that Eli Roth, this guy has been known for doing all these, like, gory, horrific movies, is now doing something in more of, like, the fantasy realm right there. And I think it's really kind of cool. I like it when a director does things outside their wheelhouse and tries to challenge themselves and to be... That is what makes a director really good. Like, I'm really hoping one of these days Rob Zombie does like a family drama.
Disney animation.
Yes.
He'll do The Lion King.
You know? Oh my gosh, Rob Zombie's The Lion King? Yes. I'm all there for it. Maybe he'll direct Mulan.
Maybe if he did Lion King, he can also sing the songs as well, couldn't he?
Yes.
Imagine him singing The Circle of Life.
Yeah.
But But with this one, we've got something for the kids to see, shall we say.
Sure.
I'd say.
So on the same week in the UK, we have one that Vern wants to talk about. A Simple Favor.
Yeah, so I'm seeing A Simple Favor mainly because it has two of my crushes in there, and that is Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. And in the movie, Anna Kendrick meets, I guess, a neighbor in town played by Blake Lively, and they both leads start to become friends, even though Blake Lively's character tells Anna Kendrick that you don't really want to be friends with me. And then she goes missing. Blake Lively's character goes missing, and Anna Kendrick is trying to find out where she is. The premise of it kind of reminds me a little bit of Gemini, which is about another girl that goes missing. It's weird, too. This movie is directed by Paul Feig, and he's the guy behind The Bridesmaids and 2016's Ghostbusters reboot. And this is more of a drama. It's definitely, I'm sure there'll be a little bit more of like dark comedy elements to this. It also reminds me a little bit of Gone Girl in a way too, because there's the scene in the trailer where they accuse the husband of having something to do with her disappearance. So it's that element of it. Yeah, I think the main reason I'll see this is because of my infatuation and love of Anna Kendrick. And I was basically see a lot of movies that she's in, even if I don't like them, like the Pitch Perfect movies sequels. Yeah, I think she's a beautiful woman, and I will basically watch anything that she's in. I am kind of curious about seeing Paul Feig do other things. I don't know if you watched the Joel McHale show with Joel McHale on Netflix, but he's on there. I think he was executive producer of that. So, like I said before, I'm always interested in filmmakers doing different things or doing different genres, so I'll be curious to check this out. Any thoughts at all?
It is a good pick. I'm intrigued with the director's choice because we might actually see whether he can make good movies at last, because I found all his comedies to be very boring.
Really?
Including Yeah, Bridesmaids was so boring, especially after watching Girls Trip. So,
okay.
Girls Trip was a lot better.
You didn't like Heat or Spy?
Spy, I liked Jason Statham, and that was probably, and Rose Byrne, but Melissa McCarthy annoys me a lot.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
This seems to be every episode of this. Even though we're doing it, now we're down to monthly, every episode's like, hate Melissa McCarthy. She seems to have a film out every month. I don't know what's happening. I just don't find her funny. Nothing against her, but of course we do have, as you say, the goddess herself, Miss Kendrick, in this movie. So I like seeing some of her weird movies, and this is going to be a bit out of her normal, because she's been doing a lot of quirky little rom-coms, hasn't she, for the last couple of years. I know she made a big impact with a more serious comedy with Up in the Air, and I want to see her get back to that sort of acting without the quirkiness at times. It's always good to see what Mrs. Reynolds is doing.
Yes, indeed.
Other than swimming with a shark. And
I would gladly have Ryan Reynolds kick my ass for an hour for like one date with her. It'll be worth me being in a hospital for several months.
Fair enough. Well, if you're in the hospital, you could get some of Deadpool's regeneratory abilities, and it won't hurt after a while. or nick his watch and go back in time and make him forget about it. Or is that too much of a spoiler?
How do you think they're going to portray the quote-unquote mommy blogger persona? It says here,
she's
a mommy blogger. I love mommies and I love bloggers and I'm a blogger myself, but I don't know. I wonder if it'll have a negative connotation, or she'll be like successful at it and make a lot of money doing it or what.
Well, I mean, IMDb always has like the worst descriptions of movies.
Yeah, they're very, very vague, aren't they?
I mean, I got deeper. That's all I just need to know about the movie there. I find it cool too that Linda Cavallini is also in this, who was in Scooby-Doo and Fritz and Dietz, and she's another actress that's really kind of cool. Doesn't give enough credit, I think.
She's on the rise for popularity, yeah.
Good.
I think.
Good.
I think she's been doing a lot of the near Oscar bait movies, I think.
Yeah.
And she's always seems to be the lead in sort of rom-coms at the moment, especially classics like Daddy's Home.
Yes, the cinematic, the new Criterion release.
Yep, right up there.
I don't even see a rating here on IMDb.
What for?
For the simple favor.
Well, it's only coming out in September.
Okay, yeah, it gives all the usual stuff, but it doesn't say the rating.
Oh.
Maybe they're deciding whether they want to add a sneaky little bit in or not.
Mm.
Well, in England, it's a 15.
Okay.
So that would generally mean it's, what, an R for you?
Really?
R, what's R age, generally?
Well, we have a PG-13, which means it's a little worse than PG.
Well, PG-13 to us would be 12, which is you're allowed one swear word, and that's about it.
Okay.
So R would... 15 is violence, basic nudity and stuff like that, and 18 is Eli Roth movies. Pretty much.
I think they should have made Eli Roth direct the Mommy Blogger movie.
The Simple Favor?
I'm just kidding. I have a feeling based on the review, which, I have to be honest, I didn't really care about this film yet, but I was kind of turned off by this movie. I really like Blake Lively. Kendrick, believe it or not, I'm a red-blooded male, but I could do without. You know, I don't know. I'm a little old, maybe, for her. I don't, or for, you know, for the generation that really likes her. Who knows? But, I did see her in Up in the Air about 2 weeks ago, and I just loved it. She did a great job in that movie, don't you think?
I think she's a incredible actress right there. Funny. Yeah, I will.
And Blake Lively's good too, but in a way, she's sort of missed the boat on a lot of roles. I think Age of Adeline, I couldn't sit through. It was a good story, but I don't know. I didn't think she's beautiful, but you know, you got to go a little beyond that, I think, to create a personality that people want to go see. And the one I did like her in a lot was that shark movie.
The Shallows?
What was it called again?
The Shallows.
The Shallows. Yeah, I saw that in the theater, and I loved that movie. What they did with just one actor was so amazing, and she did a good job on that. But I don't know, maybe this is her chance to shine. That's probably the highlight of her, everything I've seen by her. I don't know if you guys could recommend anything else, but that's...
The Town.
The Town. That's where they rob a bank, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
That's going back a ways, but she's good in that?
She was good in that one, though, too. I haven't really seen two other movies of hers, except for The Shallow. Hick wasn't bad. I like that one. Savages was all right there, too.
She's more of a big TV star because of Gossip Girl, so isn't she?
Yeah.
That was taking up most of her time. And you can't do... You don't need to be doing two or three movies a year at the sort of pace I had Ryan in their relationship, are they? They're quite happy to do a movie each...
Mm-hmm.
Have family time.
Yeah.
I really like movies where they take someone who's naive but really driven, kind of like Up in the Air. Anna Kendrick was the person that, you know, does the firing. And then they go through seeing how the real world works, you know, and it messes with their psychology. So I'm kind of hoping it's like that. Like they say Mommy Blogger maybe because she's very naive, but she's going to get abducted and then something will happen that will change her. That could be interesting to me.
Could be. Although I think that in this one, when Blake Lively's character goes missing and she's trying to find out what happened to her, I think the twist may be that she had something to do with her disappearance.
Yeah.
Like I said before, I really don't know. I kind of like these mystery type movies. I'm sure it may be a complete shit show. But I'd say the trailer has me fascinated, number one, because A, you have a director who's known for doing mostly comedies, and now he's doing something a little bit more dramatic, I guess. I think it's going to be more of a darkly comedy. I don't know what to expect at all from this. I know this was based on a book by Darcy Bell, and a screenplay is by this writer, Jessica Fraser, who's really had, the only other movie that she's done is Nerve, with Dave Franco.
Emma Roberts.
And Emma Roberts, thank you, yes. That's the only thing that this writer, Jessica Scharzer, has done, the only feature. And I was not a big fan of Nerve.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny you say that, because as I was watching that movie, I was thinking, you know, this is not, I'm like, you know, Generation X, I'm not really millennial, I'm definitely not millennial, but I liked it, you know, but I think it's made for millennial audience, and you're a little bit younger, I think, so.
You know, I had just had certain issues. And it wasn't the fact that it was always was made for. I mean, there could be movies made for, doesn't matter what generation the movie's made for, you can still find something good or bad about it, though. And I may have to re-look at it again. I know I've got a review posted of that. I'll have to look through that and maybe watch it. But I'm getting off topic here.
I like it that you're open-minded. I mean, we had the same discussion online about Insidious.
Yeah.
And he said no, and I said yes. I think Darren says yes too. But you know, that movie was like, it's one of my favorite horror movies still, and it's not even R, you know. But it's just, I like the way it's made. But this one, yeah, we are getting a little off topic. But just to say, you know, they all have phones. They're all part of some secret club where they know how to log on, and they go to the secret club, and the secret club moves them around the whole night. That's not really from something that my generation does, you know, that kind of stuff.
True.
I was against Nerve because I'd seen a more horror-related version of that. That was a lot more interesting.
About, what was that called? Lump.
I've actually forgotten what it's called. I think it's the one with Ron Perlman in it, called, like, 13 Eerie, where someone has to do 13 tasks. Yeah, so it gets more graphic and that's being, like, put into doing something for money, which basically Nerve is doing, and it's just a lot more interesting and clever with the twists it has. I'd recommend that a lot more, and it has got Ron Perlman in, so you have a better main character actor. He's not the main character, he's sort of a cop in it, but
okay.
That was why I wasn't a fan of Nerve. Nerve was like a polished version of it as such, a bit. We've seen a lot of films do that where we have a cinematic version. We could use The Hunger Games to Battle Royale type of thing to it. That's kind of what it felt like.
Gotcha.
So, but as we were off topic, we should move on. So, we're going to go to one of the two that I've selected, and this one is probably going to get off topic just because of who the lead actor is in this movie, and that is Final Score. And as the IMDb gives away the most blatantly easy, the IMDb description is, some scores will never be settled. That's all it says. But it's basically about a terrorist who threatens to blow up West Ham's football stadium if Batista doesn't kill someone. And Dave Batista has to go all Bruce Willis on everybody and ride a motorcycle across the roof to stop the bomb going off. I don't know, it looks like a lot of fun, bad fun. It has a cast that's going to be entertaining with Pierce Brosnan and Ray Stevenson. I know it's going to be complete trash, but it is going to be on Sky Cinema straight away for us, so I don't actually have to get out of the house to watch it, which is even better.
Well, nice.
It just looks like something that, like, Stallone or Seagal would have been doing in the 90s.
Yeah, definitely. This has definitely got that 90s. I mean, ever since Die Hard came out, everyone wanted to do, like, a retread of the Die Hard trope. I just went really... this is a movie that I'll see eventually, but the trailer, just the way the trailer's cut, because every action trailer, they always have like, the same type of beats, and you got the slow motion sound effects in there, and you gotta add in the rap song in there as well. It looks very standard. You got a good guy, you got a bad guy, you got to fight a bunch of other bad guys to get to the main bad guy, and that's really it. And you're setting it in a football, soccer for the U.S. listeners, stadium. I don't know. It kind of reminds me, what's that movie, Nick of Time, with Johnny Depp's got to try to stop someone a certain amount of time, or Snake Eyes with Nicolas Cage in the stadium. Sudden Death, Jean-Claude Van Damme was in a hockey arena. In fact, I kind of wish Jean-Claude Van Damme was in this one. Dave Bautista, I like him, but he's just not a leading man actor. You know, I think he was a wrestler at one point, and I know a lot of wrestlers want to become big movie stars, and I'm not saying he can't have that charisma, but I'm kind of sick and tired of wrestling stars wanting to become action stars right away. All right? I would love for a wrestling star to be known as being a comedic actor or a dramatic actor. Chris Brosnan is good. I have this Scott Mann, he's not really known.
Ray Stevenson.
Yeah, Ray Stevenson is one too, but this director, Scott Mann, I mean, he's done like other heist movies. Nothing well known at all. In fact, I'm even surprised that this is getting even a theatrical release. I know it's showing up on Sky Cinema, but this looks like really, like, even a made-for-TV type of thing. Like, something I would see here on the U.S. on the TNT network. Just an original movie. Like, a Netflix original movie, but like a throwaway Netflix original movie. And I'll shut up now so you can talk to him. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. This one. Yeah, everybody talking about World Cup, World Cup. Everybody talking about World Cup. I don't give a shit about World Cup. Sorry.
It's because America weren't in it.
I
you got beaten
sports.
By Panama.
I try to watch sports. All my life I have tried to watch sports. I just can't sit through it. I always want to be playing guitar or recording a podcast. Other than anything, any creating, not like being completely like, a robot. That's how I see people watching sports. But anyway, I don't mean to put people down. I know it's a huge thing. But when I saw the sporting event happening and I saw what was going on with the lights turning off and stuff, I was like, not my kind of movie. And Dave Bautista, I agree with Vern. He's kind of like, I'll bet he has really big cue cards with very few words on them. You know, hey, Dave, I'm going to get the bad guy now. I don't I just can't really picture him being endearing or cool as a, you know, Bruce Willis type. And one more thing about Pierce Brosnan. Has Pierce Brosnan, like, ever added anything to a movie? Forget James Bond, I mean. But has he ever, like, been beneficial to a movie?
Well,
I'd say he saved No Escape.
No Escape.
Wilson.
All right, but it almost seems like they just pull him in because he's available and they need a face. You know?
The Matador was pretty good. He was pretty funny in The Matador with Greg Kinnear.
Okay, and I like
Evelyn's
funny. This isn't
good.
A comedy though. Look at his face on the poster if you get a chance. His eyebrows are all furrowed.
I don't think he was good in The Foreigner with Jackie Chan.
Okay,
as well.
Didn't see that. I like Jackie Chan.
The Rules End.
Exactly. He's somebody who doesn't seem to... He's good at being someone in the background. He was in The Ghost Writer, wasn't he? Or The Ghost of Ewan McGregor. He's very good at being a little bit of a sneaky bad guy or a shady figure. Even though Bond is sort of... He may have been in the so-called best Bond movie. And the
which
worst
one?
Bond movie.
Well, I'm starting to watch him, so which one?
Well, GoldenEye is widely considered one of the best before they decided to turn him into Mission Impossible and the Bourne franchise. but then Die Another Day is probably the worst of the Bond movies when you have a CGI hurricane, a tidal wave, I mean, that he surfs over ice.
We'll have to have your British counterpart over there, Will, to come on the show from Exploding Helicopters, and he can say what the best one is. I like Spectre. I enjoyed that. But, hey, we're talking about Pierce Brosnan. I don't know, man. I just look at the poster and I think, that's not helping the movie for me to see his face. Whereas I think in UK, you're telling me he's, you know, a good thing to put in a movie.
He's reliable, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think he's... But the main reason I picked this one is more to do with the Dave Bautista taking on Disney single-handedly in his battle to get James Gunn rehired.
Is this a shut it off movie, as you call them? Just shut it off and let it go.
Relaxion.
Relaxion. I like that.
Yeah.
But it's more to do with the fact that I want to see... He needs to prove himself outside. I know he's had good smaller roles in Blade Runner. His character was great. A very small part, but it was a great character. Added a lot to Blade Runner for the early stages. He was great. Well, he's great in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's like the psycho mad killer guy that comes in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he's fantastic in the Guardians movies as Drax. So he's, he's my favourite character in the Guardians nowadays. So his one line is that he comes out with such dry wit. And it's just, he's doing weird action movies off, like, he's done like the Kickboxer remake, but it was called a sequel, even though someone else was playing Jean-Claude Van Damme's character with the same name, but Jean-Claude Van Damme was playing the mentor character with the same name. So he's doing weird stuff like this, but, and he's doing things like Escape Plan 2. So he's putting himself around the right people. And he did, what was it, Hotel Artemis with Jodie Foster and Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah.
Again, supporting role. I haven't seen it because it barely got a showing over here. But he's putting himself out there to be doing different things. He's not demanding the spotlight like Dwayne Johnson did when he first stepped out of the wrestling ring, if you get what I mean. Which is the one positive. He's trying to earn the respect as an actor.
I predict, this is coming out September 14th over here, I predict this will not do well financially because of a couple things. One thing is the title. I think it's September, people are back in school, you know, final score doesn't mean diddly squat to anybody, it's just they're just going to see it and pass through it when they look at what's playing. And the main actor is Dave Bautista, who has not established himself. And I should know how old he is. I think he's older than The Rock, isn't he?
Yeah, he's nearly 50. Batista.
Okay, all right. So am I, so watch it. But anyhow, I just think it might be a little late for him to try and, you know, break out of the mold that he's in with Guardians and wrestling and do something like this. I hate to say that because, you know, getting up in the morning is like a comeback for me at my age. But, you know, seriously though, I mean, I don't think people are going to be interested. And Pierce Brosnan, he may have a lot of pull in the UK, or people may see him as reliable, as you say, but I don't know. Like, I don't know anybody that's excited about.
It just looks like the same tape of action movies that we've seen many times before. It doesn't matter where you set this at. It could be set at an amusement park. It could be set at a auto boat show or something. I mean, you got a bad guy, he's kidnapped this guy's daughter. The setting doesn't really matter. I guess if they made soccer play into the plotline of this, it would be somewhat fascinating. But it's just a backdrop. That's all it is. So there's really nothing exciting about the storyline at all. And
well, I've noticed that the UK is real interested in soccer, and America is too, somewhat. But an untapped resource here was the Hispanic market, because they call it football Americana. You know, it's soccer, and these people, I have people that I know personally that camp out all day long with their family and play soccer and watch their kids play soccer. It's like so huge to them.
But
go ahead.
But are you going to watch a whole movie where it's just a backdrop? I mean, would you watch this movie if it was set? Well, I know you don't play. I know you like watching sports. But would,
once in a while.
Would Eisen watch this if it was set in a baseball arena? I mean,
yeah. But if you look at the cover, I don't know if you've seen the cover, but it's just something exploding, final score, and these three, you know, I call them mediocre talents. So if people really wanted to go, like if it was the middle of the summer, it might do good. Because people are like, oh yeah, that's an action movie, I'm going to that. But I predict that it's not going to have the pull. I could be wrong, I'm wrong a lot. But, you know, that's the fun of doing the show. You make predictions, see what happens.
I think where this one can work over any other sporting event is the fact that most of your American sports, your baseballs, your American football, everything, it has a lot of breaks in it. Football doesn't stop. It's 90 minutes. You have a 15-minute half-time, and that's it. It's not a stop-start sport, so it's trying to make sure it is a backdrop, so you're not really going to care about the football. But it gives you it's only being used as your clock to tell you how long he's got, which is, I think, the selling point. It's not necessarily the sport. It's the idea that we're going to watch a 90-minute movie that is set in a 90-minute football match.
This one we need to revisit next month. Let's, because some we forget to revisit. Let's really revisit this one, because now I'm really curious how it's going to do.
Well, we'll head back to you, Damien, for your second pick then.
Oh, you would do that. Drum roll, please. No. Okay. Gosh, this is one I wish I would have wrote a script for, because I don't want to leave anything out. It's kind of an important one. It's called The Nun. And I have gone to see several movies in this past month, which I'll talk about those later. But one of them was Slender Man. And I know you guys aren't getting it for a while, so I'm not going to spoil anything. But before Slender Man, they played a whole slew of horror previews. And The Nun was one of them. And I had also previously seen it as well. I like this idea of this movie because we're getting back to the source of some really scary movies and really cool horror movies, creepy movies. Now, it looks like it's going to be creepy, but there also are going to be some jump scares, which, I mean, we're due for some jump scares. There haven't been very many jump scares through The Conjurings, and there's a few, but this one looks like whatever this nun is, whoever this nun is, she's pissed off entity. You know, we're gonna be seeing some scares, I think. And I just like it how it spawned all these other things, you know, Annabelle the doll. Help me out, Darren. What else? There's something else.
That's it. It's only The Conjuring.
Is it just Annabelle?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, and The Conjuring movies are great. Personally, I think Conjuring 2 is much better than Conjuring 1.
Oh, you're insane. You're
why?
Insane, man. Oh, come on. Conjuring 2 just bothered me. Oh, God. I thought there's just so many things there's so many things that are more comedic than they need to be. I think the first one is really good. I don't know, the second one, it just bothered me a lot.
But Ed plays to the children on his 1960s guitar.
Oh, gosh.
You know my feelings for the second one. I like the film, but I had seen The Enfield Haunting with Timothy Spall the year before.
Mm.
So it was exactly the same story. It didn't need to be done again.
Well, but how about that scene where you see the nun in Conjuring 2?
But the thing is, the Amityville's been proven to be crap anyway, hasn't it? That's the problem.
Well, James Wan is a master. I know, Darren, you think that too. And he, he's done all, not all the Saws, but he's, you know, he started the Saw franchise. I think he did one and two. Is that it?
He did one.
He just did one. Okay.
James Wan's not directing this one.
I thought he was.
Nope, he's just one of the writers.
He's literally done The Conjuring. It's done by Corin Hardy, is it?
Yeah.
I believe he's done a few horror movies. He hasn't done anything to do with these films.
Now I'm not as excited, because I swear to God, I thought he directed it. I thought I read that somewhere. I thought he was coming out and doing it.
Nope, he's just one of the writers. Yeah.
He probably only gets a credit because of Nun and The Conjuring as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
You guys have burst my bubble. No.
Sorry, man.
I think it'll still be fun. You know, at least he's on the project in some way. And, you know, I usually don't care about possession horror. I'm not that into it. I like the older possession horror, but, you know, like 70s Rosemary's Baby and stuff like that. I like that stuff. But the stuff they put out nowadays, it's just for shock. You know, they show people walking around like with their body all bent up and stuff, and we're supposed to be scared of that. But James Wan has always put things together. And again, I come back to Insidious. Sorry, Vern. That movie does so much with a little song, Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
That, yeah. I was laughing out loud at theaters when that came on there. People that had told me to shut up there.
I think your inner child was scared, and so you had to laugh.
Probably true. Slap through the pain.
Hey, I will be seeing The Nun. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to be seeing it. I'm going to keep an open mind. And, Darren, what do you think about The Nun?
I'm on board just because I think Annabelle Creation saved the spin-off franchises, because the really difficult thing with Annabelle Creation is it's the third best in the franchise, but it's not far behind the two Conjurings, but it's a long way ahead of the first Annabelle, which was crap. This is the big plus thing. I'm happy to go. We seem to be doing prequels. That's the way we're doing this now with this franchise. Everything is working quite well. Boy, let's do Annabelle where we meet the doll. Let's do Annabelle where we made the doll. Now let's do the nun from the random helper who lived in the house who was haunted by a nun. So, what's going to happen next? Are we going to go back in time again? It's a very interesting way to do horror movies when we usually get pointless sequels. I've only seen one trailer and I'm avoiding everything because I am worried that they may give too much away in the trailers, but I do feel that this has a potential wonderful run in the cinema because it's picked the It weekend to come out. Like, we saw how well It did last year, and this exact same weekend there isn't really that much competition in September for films that are going to do well at the cinema. I know we have another movie coming up, but I still think that's going to struggle compared to this. It's probably going to be accessible for all. It'll probably be one of your PG-13s or a 12 for England. I can't see it being pushed and ramped up to a 15 for the franchise. But then again, it has got that reputation now because the commercial was too scary for YouTube.
So, oh, really?
Yep, they had to delete it off YouTube because it was too scary.
The one you see in theatres?
I don't know which one is. I decided not to go and watch it because if it's scary, it means it's going to have a scare I want to see in the movie first time rather than on a trailer.
Plus, you know, if you watch it, it takes your soul too, so.
Exactly.
When I heard about this movie, The Nun, I thought it'd be going into more like a killer nun, an exploitation movie. There's actually a movie called The Killer Nun. And I really wish they would remake this because it's about a demented nun sliding through morphine addiction into madness while presiding over a raid of lesbianism, torture, and death.
Mm.
I thought it'd be a movie about this nun that just goes psycho and starts killing people. I'd watch that. But to know that this is a prequel sequel to the Conjuring franchise has me probably a little less excited about it, though. It was like its own original property. I think it's going to be creepy in a lot of places. I do like some of the actors in there, especially Teresa Farmiga, who is Vera Farmiga's sister. So yeah,
I wonder how she got the job.
Nah. I know, right? Has nothing to do with the sister. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine to watch. It's probably not one I'm going to see in cinemas right away. But I will see it eventually. The whole gothic horror thing, it's kind of been a hit or miss. Like I said, I really like the first Conjuring a lot. I have not seen Annabelle Creation. I'm kind of fascinated now to watch that with your recommendation, Darren. The Nun. When I saw Joseph, though, I wasn't really that fascinated. I wasn't really necessarily that scared by it.
Well, let's we're going to probably eventually see it, because we all end up watching horror movies. Sure. We usually do it just to trash them.
We do, yes.
I'm sure Damien will get to that later.
We've had plenty of shows where, you know, when it came to talking about horror or something like horror, we surmised that there hadn't been any horror coming out. I think around before Christmas, I think it was, of last year, there was like no horror in the theaters at all. So with the fact that The Nun is coming, you know, to a theater right here, close to my house, man, I'm going.
I just wish it didn't have the title The Nun, you know, maybe Vatican or the Nun.
Have you ever looked up the statistics of how many Catholics there are? I mean, there are so many Catholics. It's a really big piece of the pie of population. And so they really revere the nun. The nun is a very... I'm not Catholic, obviously, but, you know, I respect other religions, of course. But, this is a holy figure.
I know, but for, like, a horror film, the title here, The Nun, I mean,
I would counter-argue that one. It's good. It's a good title solely because you know it's the connection to The Conjuring. It's that nun you see. Mm-hmm. Well, they could have called it That Nun, couldn't they?
I see.
But it's only... That's what's the pull for this movie. That's the only reason it's got the title. If it was a standalone movie, I would agree with you that The Nun is a terrible title. But because it's that connection to The Conjuring... Again, you could say the same about Annabelle. That's just the name of the doll. So they are just looking at the horror elements that were haunting around... The Warrens, and that's why it's just called The Nun.
I just thought of a way to sell more tickets. I wish I could have got to them earlier. James Wan, if you're listening, change it all. The Nun with a Saw.
Ooh.
Couldn't you just do one of Vern's remakes and do nude nuns with big guns?
Yes,
and a saw.
Oh my god. Nude nuns, big guns, and a saw. Yeah.
And just stop making out that James Gunn has got everything to do with this movie. He's busy making Aquaman.
Iron Man, she can do it.
He's busy making Aquaman. Leave him alone. He's got enough people who are going to hate him come next year for no reason because the internet is full of haters. Let's let him have his peace and quiet.
The good thing about the world we live in now is we'll know in the first couple of days if it sucks, you know? I like that. I'll probably still go anyway. But now that I know James Wan didn't direct it, yeah, I have to say it deflated me a little bit.
Well, Vern, we'll go to your next documentary pick.
Okay. So my next documentary is all about the singer MIA, who I'm a big fan of, and she has a documentary called Maya... Bentinga MIA, and it's all about, it's actually, the trailers of this one are a lot different than your normal pop documentary, because she was a refugee in Sri Lanka, and she came here to this, she came overseas to London and became a pop star, but it's not about her rise to fame as being like this pop artist. She is basically like as before this refugee, and I'm just trying to find now elements of this on IMDb so I can look up the writer and director of this one. But yeah, when I saw trailers of this, it just looked really fascinating. I just wanted to know more about this because I get so sick and tired of most documentaries and how it's about their rise to fame, and that's not what this one really is at all. Plus I like her music and I like the fact that it's going to be kind of a different style of documentary that we are not used to seeing, and it's all a collection of home videos that she shot before she actually did move away, but it's supposed to be And it's a portfolio of this artist and musician, and she had to deal with a bunch of, like, threats in her own country, even here. I don't really know what to say about it, though, because the trailer made it kind of vague in the way it just said on there that this is not going to be a normal documentary about a pop star, and that MIA is not your normal pop star. And I even heard, when I posted this trailer on Facebook, I had people write me back saying that they're not a fan of MIA, but they'll even still watch it. So, yeah, I think this is for fans if you like MIA's music, and for people that don't know, I think one of her biggest songs was Paper Planes, and in the chorus, it has a sound of gunshots and a cash register. I'm seeing this mainly because I like MIA's music, and I'm also seeing this because I think it's going to give me a different reflection than we most normally see in pop documentaries.
All right.
Yes. See, because she's an English-based singer.
Yes.
I have never heard of her.
I haven't either.
Look, your songs are good. Oh, my gosh. Paper Planes, I think if I had to start anyone off with songs of hers, Paper Planes was used in Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, I've only seen that once, so I can't.
You always see that one, brother? All I want to do is boom, 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 and take your money. Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to, but that's whatever.
But the story it looks like it's telling is showing us how somebody can be put in a position of celebrity but could then try and tell the bigger story of the world problems before it was, like, the it thing to do, like they all seem to want to do now. And that's kind of what I feel like it's trying to tell us. Like, she could have shut her back to everything that was happening in Sri Lanka, but she ended up trying to use her position of music to make sure everyone could see what was happening so they could try and stop what was happening or find a solution. And that's what I feel like we're going to get a lot of. She's going to be always, it's one of those interesting documentaries which you are going to want to watch. Which, again, we are getting a lot of these type of documentaries. Which is easier to make, shall we say.
Right.
I don't know if it's coming to Netflix or to the cinema.
It's just coming to theaters September 28th, at least in the US. It's coming to, I think they're trying more for a big, well, at least here in the US, I know it's going to be playing at, like, independent theaters. I know they're going to try to go for a theatrical run with this one. And I really want this to be seen in theaters because, especially with music documentaries, I want to hear MIA's music on the big screen, even though it's not going to focus mostly on her career. I know it's going to feature a lot of her songs, and I want to hear her music on the big screen, because I'm, like I said before, I'm a fan, at least of her first two albums. You probably have heard a lot of her songs and trailers, especially Bad Girls.
My music knowledge is
live fast. Really. You should probably live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. They play that in like every other trailer.
Darren, I think I have a good teaser for this show that I can put out on Twitter. I think
it
was just recorded. Yeah. So keep that right little section there.
Are you going to put some guitar
that was good,
to it
right?
as well?
You're good, man.
Not just my ear right there.
Little drum, too. Where's the drum? There we go. No, don't really do it. I don't have any interest in that movie. I don't know. It's just, you know, like, I'm listening to Post Malone right now. He's pretty new, and I like him, but I never heard of her stuff. I like documentaries that I stumble upon, like, years after they were made because they have, like, a bigger purpose. So it sounds like the purpose of this is just to kind of promote coming from a third world country and making it over here. That doesn't really interest me. But,
fair enough there. I mean, I know the, if this was about another singer, I probably wouldn't be interested in it. But
and that's who it's appealing to.
Yeah, so the fact that I like MIA's music is makes me want to see the documentary. But if this was, I don't know, just other random city, if it was like, you know, the story of like, I don't know, who's popular now, NSYNC, New Kids on the Block, it was a story about them fighting oppression somewhere. I don't know if
I... Popular now?
What was that?
Are they popular still now?
I don't know. I don't know who's popular now.
Yeah, just be quiet. Let them finish.
I don't know who's popular nowadays. Katy Perry. Like, if Katy Perry was heard about her...
21 Pilots. Somewhere. Everybody likes 21 Pilots. So, yeah, let's do a documentary on 21 Pilots.
21 Pilots?
You don't know 21 Pilots?
Are they going to be flying airplanes?
They're great. They're kind of a hip-hop thing, but they have guitars and stuff. They're pretty good.
I have no clue. You probably have to tell me what the songs and I'd be like, okay.
That's okay. We'll just move on. You can look them up. They're great. I love them.
All right.
Well, for the last major talking point, we have to go back to another sequel, reboot, remake, something or other. The Predator, directed by Shane Black.
Yeah.
Coming back to where he started, to bring us a giant predator that's attacking people now because stuff happens. And the trailer for this movie has made me not want to watch it more. I'm not going to lie. I like all three of the solo Predator movies for what they are. They all have their own little unique style. Fair enough, I don't mind the Danny Glover one. Even Topher Grace one's watchable. But I'm really confused with this one. It's just, I don't really know what's going to happen. Like, it looks horrible in the trailers. Just, here's a town, here's Alien versus Predator 2 without the aliens again. And oh yeah, the Predator's been on steroids. And that's all I've got for the trailer.
You know, I'll be honest with you, man. I did not watch... I watched, like, one teaser trailer of this when it first came out. I'm only seeing this because Shane Black is directing this and writing this. And after making great movies such as Kiss Kiss Bane Bane, The Nice Guys, Iron Man 3, I'm basically anything this guy does. He also wrote Last Action Hero, Long Kiss Goodnight. I will see this. Plus, you got the return of Fred Decker, who was responsible for Monster Squad, and I think he also did Night of the Creeps. I'm like the fact of having these two writers do this movie. I don't mind the fact that the trailer is crap because most of the times trailers are complete shit. Because they have this marketing house that tries to cut their film together the best way they can. And they probably have no idea of how to cut this film together. Because they just get a few scenes and they're trying to market this more to a mass audience. And I think it's going to fail in that aspect. But just trust in the fact that you have a good writer-director like Shane Black. I think The Nice Guys is an amazing movie that a lot of people did not see, but really should have. I put all my faith right now in the fact that Shane Black is doing that. And you should too, Darren. Believe.
I'm all on board because I like a Predator movie. I like Shane Black. I like the cast here. You've got Thomas Jane, Boyd Holbrook, Yvonne Strahovski, Jacob Tremblay is in it, Olivia Munn, Jake Busey, Keenan Michael Kay. It's like, it's got a great car.
Yeah.
I'm just, the only thing that's ever put me off going to see this movie is the trailer.
Okay.
That's the only thing. I'm always going to be on board. I will always watch a Predator movie and just want to see a Predator do something, but they're never going to live up to Arnie fighting them because they're not built like Arnie, any of these guys.
That's true.
And that's... But again, it's one of those... Which has got one of those trailers that just pisses me off a lot more than it should.
I gotcha. Fair enough.
Well, Damien, are you going to see it as well?
I will. It looks fun. I've seen here and there through the years. I mean, gosh, Predator is as old as Commando and some of those other early Schwarzenegger films. Rambo. I mean, I put it in the same category. So, yeah, I'll go see it. It looks fun. I mean, I really have nothing to say about it, like, from, you know, a plot perspective, like, what I want to see happen in the plot or anything like that. I just think it'll be really fun effects. And they're going to open a can of whoop-ass on something.
Fair enough. Well, that's our major six, then, which we all have mixed feelings about. And we're probably, between us, going to see at least half of these movies.
Hey, Darren. Real quick, we talked about M.I.A. Let's see if this works. I have not heard it, but it sounds good. Cool beat.
And there's our copyright strike.
You know, we're promoting it, and they usually don't do a scan on podcasts that have about 3 followers. Just kidding. But no, I like it. Sounds good. I won't play 21 Pilots, but they're the ones that sing da 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 do da 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 do, you know, and
that song.
Yeah. Oh, they got a bunch of great songs.
That song at the end of
Suicide Squad.
God, I hate that.
That's from Suicide
Squad. Sorry, man.
I still don't know the band or the song.
I hate that song. I didn't know you do
that. They got a bunch of songs. We're all stressed out. When Mama said we used to, you know, play in the streets, but now we're stressed out. You know.
Okay. Now. I forgot now, it's, but now I know.
All right. I'm just trying to prove I'm cool still at 49, man. Come on.
Well, we're just going to go through a few more releases, give a quick quote on if we're going to see it, yes or no. The first one on this list is The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Damien, yes or no?
Yes, but I don't remember why. I just remember liking the trailer.
Okay. That?
This looks like a more serious version of the movie But Mom, I'm a Cheerleader. So maybe, I guess, I would say I'd much rather just watch But I'm a Cheerleader.
Fair enough. I'm in because it's getting a lot of Oscar buzz early on. One of the last ones of the year. The next one is The King of Thieves. Burn? Yes or no?
Probably not, because I think there's a movie called Small Time Crooks done with Woody Allen and Uma Thurman that was a little bit better movie. Probably not too keen on this one.
I've never heard of it, so I won't be seeing it, Damien.
Same.
Fair enough. The next one on the list is going to be the epically mild Mark Wahlberg heavy movie Mile 22. Damien?
Marky. What's up, Mark? He can be good if it's a good story. I haven't looked into this one yet. I've seen a lot of news stories about it. Have you guys?
No.
People are saying it's not realistic or something like that. I don't know what. I shouldn't be talking, but...
A Mark Wahlberg movie not being realistic.
What's shocking?
It's almost like the trees have come back to life to kill everyone.
Yeah.
And he's a scientist talking about bees.
Yeah. Well, it's a mixed bag with him.
No, because those are just standard action movies. I don't see what the hell is about. They're trying to move this one guy to a certain point right there. I'm sorry, just the way the trailers cut, and this has to do with all trailers. Now, all trailers look the same. Like, I can't tell the difference really between this and that Final Score, except Final Score is set in a hockey arena. Oh, sorry, football arena. Sorry. See, I'm getting all my movies confused here, but it just looks like that team, like the same table style of Mile 22 and the Final Score. In fact, you could cut both those trailers together, and it would still seem like the same type of movie. Yeah, it just looks dull.
See, I'm in solely because of who it is. It's that guy from The Raid's in it.
I like him, yeah, but I'd just much rather watch The Raid again.
I know, but I want to see him try and conquer the American industry as such, rather than just keep doing raid movies. I'm ready. I like ones. I keep seeing all these martial artists not making it, and I want to see one actually make it a bit better. We don't have like ones doing really well in America at the moment.
The raid is good in America.
No, I meant when they come to do an American movie. While keeping like, you had Jackie Chan and Jet Li, who were like quite big in like the 90s and early noughties or such.
Oh, okay.
And there isn't really one at the moment. Like, they've tried.
He needs to be the lead of a movie then, not like one of the support players. He needs to be the actual, he should actually, if he was doing Marky Mark's role in this, then yeah, I could be into that. He should be doing that.
I think you have to do your intro one where you're the side character, and then you can go straight into a lead role if people like it.
Well, Jackie Chan didn't do that. He was, you know, when I first heard of Jackie Chan, was Rumble in the Bronx, and he was the lead character right there.
Yeah, he was still, that was still Asian, though, wasn't it? Cause all of his movies were dubbed until Rush Hour. He dubbed his English. Rush Hour was the first one he did English for. Live. He dubbed everything else, I believe. Because the director said it would make more sense if your language is a bit broken in Rush Hour. And that's why Rush Hour was even funnier. But different conversation.
Okay.
But I've seen like Tony Jaa and Donnie Yen struggle in the American movies while their other ones are doing well. I want to see one make it a bit more. That's more what I'm interested in.
Okay.
The next one is Little Stranger. Damien?
No.
Van?
You know what? I'm somewhat fascinated by this, but not in theaters. It looks like kind of a cool little mystery. It's something I would definitely watch on like a Sunday afternoon, but yeah, probably not going to see this one in theaters because the trailer didn't really appeal to me, even though it's from the director of Room and Frank, and I actually enjoy both those movies very much, so I'm sure that I will enjoy this. It's got a great cast, but all in all, it just didn't really appeal to me. I'm sorry.
I'm in because of the director. That's about it, really.
Yeah.
The next one is Climax.
Yes. Hell yes. Opening day. I've been fascinated with Gaspar Noé ever since I saw Irreversible, which like really shocked me. And I one of those movies I had to shut off and then turn back on again, but I've just been fascinated with this director ever since Irreversible. And he also did Enter the Void, and Love. I hated Love, but I'm really fascinated to see this.
Okay, Damien?
Same here. I have it on my calendar to see Enter the Void, but I've seen Irreversible, and while it was very hard to watch, it was amazing filmmaking, I thought, didn't you?
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know. I probably won't see it at the cinema, but one day maybe.
Right.
The next one on the list is Operation Finale. Damien?
I never heard of it.
Okay, Vern?
What I've been seeing on trailers, it's somewhat fascinating, you know, that they're trying to get this Nazi to trial. I like the cast, Melanie Laurent, Oscar Isaac. Although I think it's kind of weird that you're having the same director of American Pie. One of the directors of American Pie.
Like, so you've seen Stranger Things?
Well, the show?
No, I mean, we've had comedy directors go on to do better films outside of comedy.
No, I'm saying that it can't be done there. I just think it's just kind of like, I was finding Bilal right there. Like I said before, you know, you got the guy who, one of the co-writers of American Pie, doing like this serious World War II type of drama. It could be done. I'm not saying it can't be done. It looks fascinating. I think you could put this into a good triple feature with this, Valkyrie and Inglourious Bastards.
So two true ones and a fake one.
So Valkyrie's a fake one?
I thought Inglourious Bastards was a fake one.
What? But no, we all know that they killed Hitler.
Eli Roth
killed Hitler. In a movie theater.
Maybe.
That's the history I want to have.
Was that in Argentina as well? Well, the next one on the list is Peppermint, Damien.
Oh, I love Garner, but come on. No, I don't want to see that.
Van?
Well, you mean the Death Wish version female, the other Death Wish movie?
Electra the Death Wish movie.
Electra the Death Wish, yeah, this also kind of reminds me of The Brave One, Jodie Foster. Yeah, it really, nothing really stands out about this one. Her family gets killed, and she has state justice on their corrupt cops and the government officials. It just, I don't know. Standard type of thing. I just don't really care. Female Punisher, great. Jennifer Garner just helped me as a badass. I'm sorry. She just doesn't.
Did you watch the TV show Alias that was on for years?
I did not watch Alias. She
kicks ass in that. But that's going back to the 90s.
But I've seen that one too, but even then, when I saw after that one, she just doesn't seem to be that type, alright? I know she probably can kick a lot of ass, but I just, even if she beat the shit out of me, I still, like, laugh at it afterwards. I'm like, alright, was that it?
No, here's a peppermint.
And I did peppermint, but it's what she gave to Darwin there, too. Even the title alone, peppermint, it just, might as well call it candy corn. Or butterscotch. I know butterscotch schnapps. I'll see movies called butterscotch schnapps.
Fair enough. Well, the next one is one that you wanted to see, maybe. Mandy.
Yes. So Mandy, Nicolas Cage, and his girlfriend gets kidnapped by demons, and he goes to get her back, and it just looks insane. Just really fucking, like, you take a whole bunch of acid and you smoke a lot of weed, and it's like that, like just going into a psychedelic mind trip nightmare. And I'm totally into seeing this. I'm hoping it comes to actual cinemas here in the States, because it's one that I will definitely see. And it's a movie that I know a lot of people are probably going to be really irritated by, because it's not going to make a lot of sense. And I think I'm going to love watching their reactions to this than the movie itself. This may be my mother of this year, because I think I liked watching people's reactions of that movie. And I always get kind of a joy when I see people getting frustrated with a movie. I don't know why. I just like seeing people get frustrated, and I think that a lot of people will be frustrated and confused, just like they were with Mother. So, yeah, I'm definitely into seeing that.
Fair enough. There was another one you were interested in, Fahrenheit 11-9?
Yeah, the new Michael Moore documentary, the guy who directed Bowling for Columbine and Roger and Me, basically about all the really messed up things that our country has gone through now. So I'm really just kind of, I'm into seeing that.
And that's going to be in a 90-minute movie, eh?
Yep.
Fair enough. I'm sure it could be like a full-year series, isn't it, at the moment? But Michael Moore is very estranged at the moment, shall we say. I've watched both of them at last, both 9/11 and Bowling for Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes some very one-sided, the arguments that he's trying to put forward, and it's a bit frustrating. Sometimes when you watch documentaries, you like to see both sides, and maybe even if you illustrate one side as a bad, the bad side isn't getting involved. It's pretty much him just saying, this is wrong, which most of Bowling for Columbine is wrong, but nobody seems to have learned from in 20-something years.
Yeah, that's one we have to revisit, actually. It's been a while since I've seen that, but I always like it when people go against establishments, so I will watch it just because of that. I always like it when the lone person goes against government establishments, and I'm kind of a big fan. I'm also kind of will see that. It kind of reminds me of that Sacha Baron Cohen show, We Are America. So I'm anytime anyone goes against establishment, I'm always for it.
Fair enough. And there was one more. The new, about 17,000th remake of the Lizzie Borden story with... Is it Kirsten Stewart this time?
Yeah, no, Chloe 7G. And Sarah, Kristen Stewart. Oh.
Yay. I don't know how many times you can tell this story. I'm not going to lie.
True. Yeah, I know the last
one. With that axe, Lizzie.
The last one was with Senior Richie, which is probably, like Darren said, maybe the best one. So
I thought they did a TV show about it as well.
Yeah. All right.
I thought that it's just...
Let's put it this way. I like Chloe 7G. I think she's a great actress. Ever since I saw her in the movie Kids, I thought that she was just going to be one that was going to stand out. And she was one of those actresses that I was kind of following for a while because she, after she did Kids, she was in The Last Days of Disco, and then she was in Boys Don't Cry. Yeah, so I like her a lot.
Brown Bunny.
Brown Bunny, yep, see? she has a great sequence there. Yeah, so I'm fascinated by this, but it's not one that I'm going to see right away. In fact, it'll probably be several years before I even watch this one. So, yeah, you know, depends.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, we have one big question. We decided to ask our fans for some questions. And one of the friends of the show, Audrey, decided to ask us what we think of the brand new Oscar category, Most Popular Picture. So, David, you've been quiet for a minute.
Yeah.
Let's see what you think this means.
Oh, Audrey. Yeah, I did see that on her Twitter question. I haven't looked into the politics of it all. I can tell people I respect, like Audrey, are really not liking that. And yet, whenever I look for a movie to cover in a public setting, either on a blog or a podcast, I really do consider the film's popularity. I mean, that's pretty important to me. So most every site has a little button to push to sort your search into popularity. And I'm not sure exactly how they figure it, but it's like Internet Movie Database says they have 250 million visits a month. It's unbelievable.
Only 1 million from me.
Yeah, me too. So something will shoot up that maybe wasn't that good, but it's super popular. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm a media whore. I'll do that. I'll review that because that might get a few people might be interested in hearing a review about that, you know. So I like popularity. I think it's an important thing to look at. Now, I wish she was on the show right now because she could maybe explain and persuade why it's a bad thing. Do either of you have a different point of view?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to rate that. I mean, is it just going to be about biggest box office? Does the biggest box office mean the most popular movies? I mean, because in that case, you could put the Fast and the Furious franchise as being, like, a popular movie. And I don't think popularity necessarily means the best movie. I think this is just a way so that they can get Black Panther into being on the nomination. But wait, maybe not this year, because that was last year.
Black Panther would be this year.
It would be this year. Okay, yeah. So, that's right, it's coming February. I think that is just, I don't think popularity necessarily means the best. And I think the only reason why they're doing this is to get a better rating, to get more ratings on the Oscar shows, because I guess last Oscar shows was one of the lowest rated ones. And I think that's all it is. It's just a way to get more viewers, get more people to tweet online. That's all it really is. It has nothing really to do with the actual craft of movies. That's all it is. It's a marketing ploy. And that's what really irritates me most about this, is that it's just a way to get more people to watch the Oscars. And I never really considered the Oscars as being, like, this wide thing that everybody watches. To me, Oscars are just for a niche audience, and that's for movie fans like us. That's all the really Oscars are for. and now they're trying to reach this wide spectrum, and it's like, no, you really don't need to reach that wide spectrum. It's movies, all right? And I know that people like movies, and then there's people that love movies, and I always thought the Oscars were for people that really love them. Yeah, that's it. It's just, to me, it's more of a marketing ploy than anything else.
See, I'm on the fence where I'm confused, a bit like you, for how you measure popularity.
Yeah.
You can, if we were to say, just for example, you're going to nominate 5 pictures, and you're going to look at worldwide grosses, your list is going to be Avengers, Infinity War, Black Panther, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Incredibles 2, and Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I'm being honest, none of them deserve a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah.
And Incredibles will get animated, no doubt, but not a single one deserves a Best Picture nomination. If you have 10 for the Best Pictures. And if you are going to measure it on box office, then you need to actually bring the movies out before the Oscars. Like, in England, most of the movies that are Oscar-nominated come out after the Oscar ceremony.
True.
So you can't measure it that way. If you're going to do popularity, are you asking the members of the Academy what they think the best movie is, and then the most popular movie is? That's a bit harsh. Like, of course, they're going to pick their own movie then, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
It's like, where do you draw the line in this, like, question? Like,
I mean, I really kind of thought that with the creation of the People's Choice Awards, that kind of solved the whole popularity issue right there. But everyone wants to have that Academy Award winner. So right now, if that popularity award comes out, there's going to be tons of trailers where it says, you know, from the Academy Award winners of The Nun, or something like that. I don't know if that's going to be the most popular movie, but yeah, it'll just be, it's a marketing ploy. It's a marketing ploy to put into trailers. That's all it really is. It's just a way to sell more movies, because you have the banner of your film being an Academy Award winner. You know, you can put that onto your movie poster. If someone wins the Academy Award, you can put that onto the trailers of movies, and that's all this is. It's just a marketing. That's all it is.
But, okay, I'll counter-argue that. Like, out of the people that are going to see, I have to say Black Panther's going to win this popularity award. Out of the people that are going to watch Black Panther, how many are going to have their heads turned by saying, oh, look, it won an Oscar? They're going to watch it because it's a silly little action movie that's broken a few cultural boundaries.
Yeah.
No one cares that it won an Oscar who's going to watch it, apart from maybe Kevin Feige.
But you know they're going to put that into, you know, whatever next Marvel movie comes out, you know, for the Academy Award-winning producers of Black Panther.
Well, that's every Disney movie, though, or Fox movie now.
Yeah, see, no, right? Yeah.
But then DC should be throwing it out there, because Suicide Squad won an Oscar.
So just,
from the Oscar-winning movie of Suicide Squad comes Justice League, and that hasn't helped at all, has it? Like, whether the box office, like, hasn't Avengers made more in a weekend than, like, Justice League made in its entire run?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think once they can tell us what popular means,
yeah.
I think that's when people will calm down a bit more.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think that's what's caused most of the arguments. But then again, whoever wins Best Picture is obviously going to say, well, you're probably the best movie, but you're not very popular. Like, you come out like Shape of Water, for example, this year. It's like, well, you're a great movie, but no one watched you.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like as well. Like, imagine that came out with Titanic. It's like, yeah, you're the best movie, but you're not popular.
Oh, God.
It's just, imagine if something won Best Picture and Most Popular Picture this year. It would be the same movie. That would be even funnier, I think.
I think in the past, especially in the 70s and certainly in the 80s, they did go hand in hand, you know? Like, if a Michael J. Fox movie, you know, in the DeLorean, Back to the Future, if that won an Oscar, which I don't even know if it did, but just pretend.
Okay.
Let's just pretend that it did. It was also really popular, you know? So I think there's going to be some overlay there. I don't really know why they're doing it, but I will say that we live in a time where you know, everybody has access to Metacritic, IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody has access to all that. Whereas in the old days, you had to get the morning paper and look at what the critics said, you know. So even before my time, you know, because I saw Siskel and Ebert, you know, in sneak previews, and more than my parents did, more than they saw. But now we're in a time where, you know, anybody, any Joe who has a computer or even a phone can see how a movie's doing all across the platforms. And I think it's okay to look at that as a possible category. Audrey's going to probably never be on a panel with me again, but that's all right. Yeah, she can explain it to me when I see her.
If you were to look at the Best Picture winners in the, say, the last 15 years, you do have films like Lord of the Rings 3.
Yeah, very popular.
Money, and even though I think it's boring, it's popular. Titanic.
Hugely popular.
Silence of the Lambs.
Hugely popular.
Silence of the Lambs. Forrest Gump. They were all popular. The only one that probably would have won this fairly most popular would probably have been Mad Max Fury Road, which probably should have won Best Director.
Yeah.
Because it won every single technical award. So it should have won Best Director, because he's the guy that put the team together to make the film. But that's a different argument. And then you look, Get Out got nominated this year. I think it was one of the most popular horror movies. So why would that have won Best Popular Picture last year? Or... really? Or would it have been, what's the one everyone wanted to win?
What year?
Three Billboards. Everyone wanted Three Billboards to win.
Yeah.
These are the only one on the list. I think, no, there was 9 pictures, wasn't there, this year? I think there's only 3 of the nominees that were not casual film fan friendly. And that was probably The Post, Darkest Hour, and Phantom Thread. Unless you like watching films, those 3 were never going to be up for popularity.
No.
The rest could have all been classed as popular movies. Like Dunkirk, probably the best war movie since Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Get Out, obviously, for what it did for horror. For horror actually getting recognised at the cinema,
yeah,
at the Oscars. And then you have a fantasy sci-fi movie winning Best Picture.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
True.
So they have embraced a wider range of movies this last year. It's just that there are so many movies coming out nowadays. People are always going to be unhappy with whatever wins or gets nominated, because people just like going on Twitter and destroying people for no reason.
Yeah.
So
I think that they're...
That's just Star Wars.
Yeah.
Not just Star Wars. unless Ruby Rose was in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Was she in Star Wars? No.
You guys are such kind guys, you know. I personally, I wasn't always this kind. Like, when I was in my, I guess, 33, 34, I used to go on forums, and people would say things, and I would really, you know, whatever I thought, that was the thing.
That was it.
You know, that was it, yeah.
That was it.
I was a little bit open. But I remember getting into some arguments with people, like really heated arguments, and thank God, like that year and the years that followed, I learned a different way to be, you know, when you're arguing movies, because it's a medium, just like an oil painting is a medium. And one person's going to look at an oil painting of a lady scrubbing a floor and get really moved by it because maybe his mother scrubbed the floor and he watched her or something. And another guy's going to look at it and say, I don't want to be the person scrubbing the floor. Where's the positive? You know what I'm saying? So it just depends on the person, really, how you interpret something. But great art, I think, can bring out that intensity and feeling and emotion, whatever it is.
Sure.
So if somehow they can bring that popularity category to recognize movies that do that but aren't necessarily Oscars, you know, in our old sense of the word. There's a new sense of the word that has to do with online stuff. And so if they get in line with that, I'm going to really support it, you know.
But you could argue also that the box office successful movies are nominated for all the technical awards. Like Transformers, whether we like the movies or not, they should get a lot of visual effects awards. Like,
yeah,
what they do, they look fantastic.
That's true.
And also those could be put up for popular movies as well, and then we'll have to have more sequels where it says, from Academy Award winners, Michael Bay. Just remember that. We actually could get Academy Award winner, Michael Bay.
I wouldn't mind if he had that back when he was doing, like, The Rock.
Okay.
Like, those sort of movies were fun. Like, it's just, if he did, like, the right movies, he could, I don't mind him having that to his name.
Okay.
Armageddon did technically get nominated for Oscars. I think it may have won an Oscar.
It,
so he could already use that.
It does have a Criterion release.
So, he's probably already using that to help sell these Transformers movies to all these models turned actresses that become the lead actress in a Transformers movie who can't act or model and are cheap.
Cheap.
Let's put it, it's cheaper than buying Jennifer Lawrence to be in a Transformers movie.
Gosh. Oh, wait, is she,
she might as well.
Is she going to be in one? I'd watch that. Oh, I love Jennifer Lawrence here. She was in Transformers movies, yeah. I'll watch that.
It might help her career again. Let's put it back on track.
Let's put, no, I want her to be in a Transformers movie directed by Darren Aronofsky.
Well, they're not a couple anymore, so they can't.
Oh, that's right.
They're not? No. I'm sweet, so shocked.
I may have a shot now.
Maybe. Just have to get behind the beast again.
All right.
Probably. But that's the question. We have different feelings about it between us all. But let's see what we've been watching through this month of new releases of 2018. I feel like I'm going to have the shortest list here, so I'm going to go see if Fern's got one to talk about first.
I only saw just a couple movies in theaters. I saw Eighth Grade, the new movie from Bo Burnham. And it's about a girl who's in the eighth grade and she's awkward, doesn't have a lot of friends, and it just kind of goes through her life. It reminds me a lot of, what's that movie, Welcome to the Dollhouse, but that one was more a dark comedy and this one's more of a realistic drama. I am kind of curious, since you have children, Damien, if your kids have seen this movie. I know they were doing, like, A24, the studio, was doing a bunch of, like, free screenings for kids in the area. Even though this movie is R-rated, they actually wanted to have, like, a lot of, like, young audiences watch this movie. Yeah. And here's the thing, too. When I saw this movie, since I am not from that generation, it was really difficult for me to get into the mindset, but I thought the acting was really good in this. But here's the cool thing. When I watched it, there was like a bunch of young girls and their moms, like probably around the same age of this character, like probably 13 up to 15 years old. And they were sitting in front of me, and I saw one of the kids, there was a moment when the girl in this is talking to her dad, and the girl in front of me starts crying, and it affected her very well. So I think this movie will affect a lot of people that do see this, and it's because it didn't really affect me, that shouldn't take away other people's enjoyment of this. So I will recommend that you see this. Esley Fisher, the actress in this, was actually really good. I know Bo Burnham has done like a few Netflix comedy specials, which I have not seen. I know that he was in The Big Sick, which I have not seen as well. So yeah, for this being one of his debuts right there, I'm fascinated that this did very well at the box office. So yeah, Eighth Grade is one. And then the other one I saw was Black Klansman, a new Spike Lee movie, which was really good. A lot of the elements that were in that movie are still happening today. I think that the cast is really good in that. And I'm just trying to remember. I know it was like Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington. I think his name is that. Yeah, John David Washington and Adam Driver are both really good. I think that this may be one of Spike Lee's most impactful movie since Do the Right Thing. It's got an ending on there that is just really hits you. So those are the two I saw.
Fair enough. Well, Damien, how long is your list?
I'll just say what they are and then maybe say like one or two sentences. Looks like three. Sorry to Bother You is great. Loved it. Vern, I know you loved
yes.
it too.
Yes, I just did one, yes.
I gave that one five full stars on Letterboxd. Nice. And it's just really funny. I mean, it doesn't try to be serious, but it's covering, you know, prejudice. The movie is about prejudice against blacks, and it's kind of like how you would feel if you were in, you know, if you're a white guy, if your mind is open, it'll help you find out in a creative way how they feel sometimes. And I thought that that was powerful and really well done, and so I want to support that movie as much as I can. Kind of like how Get Out did as well. But this one's not horror. It's not it's just a social comedy, I would say, with a very interesting twist in the story.
Kind of reminds me of Idiocracy.
Yeah.
Meets Get Out in a way, yeah.
Yeah. Eighth Grade, you already spoke about it. Really liked it. I really identified with it, even though I'm a lot older than that generation. My daughters were like, I was like, isn't that true? I'm a terrible dad sometimes. I interrupt the movie to ask them questions. They're like, Dad, shut up. I'm watching this. Kind of like I am on here, you know. But anyhow, they both were kind of like eating their popcorn and going, whatever, leave us alone. And then toward the parts, I mean, you remember the parts in that they're really touching. There's a few really touching parts, like by the swimming pool when she has to go out and jump in. I thought that was a really powerful scene, and she did a great job on that. And my girls, you know, they're very conscious about their looks. You know, I think at their age 11 and 13. So they're very, very conscious of that, even though they're beautiful no matter what they do in my book. But, and that was neat too with the dad. There was a dad in that. Maybe that's why I related it with it so much, is because the dad was trying so hard to reach his daughter, and she didn't want anything to do with him. So that was tough, but it ended up with such a great ending, and the Eighth Grade is good. So those two I wanted to mention, and then I did want to just kind of in passing say that Slenderman is the worst film ever made. So that's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'm gonna say. You guys can figure it out on your own. Darren doesn't like it when he hasn't seen a movie, but that's
really?
No details, Darren. No details. Just telling you.
Oh gosh,
I want to go down as saying that.
Now that you said that, Damien, because I like to have a movie pass because it allows me to see bad movies without paying to see them. So. Yeah. Maybe after work, I may go check out Slender Man just to see how bad it is.
Please text me what you thought.
I will do that. All right.
I saw one critic say it makes the Bye Bye Man look good.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You could study the Bye Bye Man rather than watch this film. Okay. It's that bad. It's like an after-school special on the Disney Channel that thinks it's a horror movie. It's just, and it's just, that's too nice to even say that.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah. Love it.
Well,
that's it for me.
Oh, my list is short as well. I did finally see Ant-Man and the Wasp. I didn't really like it that much. I liked the end credits scene, and that's about it. I saw the Netflix movie Like Father with Kelsey Grammer and Kristen Bell, which I thought was quite funny, directed by Seth Rogen's wife. And that was quite a funny little movie. And I watched a movie about ice hockey players versus zombies called Ahocalypse.
What?
Oh, these titles, Darren.
Darren, sorry, man. What's it called again?
Ahocalypse.
Oh, I just want to own the poster of this movie so bad.
I can probably send you a picture of it in a minute. There's one we've yet to talk about, though, which I was surprised, and that is The Meg. Did anyone else see The Meg?
I did not see this one yet. I'm bad. No, I'm horrible. This one we talked about last episode, the one I was looking forward to besides Black Klansman, I just did not get a chance to see that one.
Oh, David, did you get to see it yet?
I did not, but I do hope to see it when it comes on TV.
Fair enough. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at those words.
Was it a bit of fun? Okay.
I'm hearing really good things about it.
So I'm hoping to see it this week. Maybe after work, I will hopefully try and see it sometime.
Okay, well, it could be up for Best Popular Movie at the Oscars.
And I'll be pulled out.
It won't be up for Best Popular Movie at the Oscars.
It has to be a combination of the box office and some form of reviews. They can't just say, okay, if they spent the most money on it, then, you know, it's the most popular. There has to be some criteria, don't you agree?
Oh, jeez. Fine.
And I'm saying, if it does win, I haven't seen it, but I mean, maybe it is really well done critically. But I'm just saying, just the fact that everybody's saying, oh, the Meg, go see the Meg, go see the Meg, and Jason Statham is smiling all the way to the bank. Yeah, I think that, you know, for something, just getting back to what we were saying before, if the Meg is good, and it's technically good, and everybody spent money on it, that should be a winner.
Yes, well, people spent money on it, a lot of money.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
But that's going to round off our September show.
Yeah.
So, we'd like to thank Devan for stepping in again.
Well, thank you.
And you can find him. And you can find him on the Cinema Recall podcast for plenty. Have you got any upcoming shows people should go and listen to more?
We just did an episode not too long ago with guest Mr. Damien Riley, where we talked about the movie Charlie's Angels, and we talked about a few of our favorite sequences from that movie, and you get to hear Damien lush over Drew Barrymore, me as well. It's a fun episode. It won our poll of best TV to movie adaptation, so we talked about a few scenes there. We're starting up a new box office review podcast, should be posting sometime next week, I'm hoping, or at least the week after, where we go over the top box office movies of last week. That was just have on there Mark Jackson and Jonathan Bowman. They are writers from the site That Moment In, and they're starting up a new podcast called Cinema Recap. So I'm hoping that will be out hopefully next week or the week after. And then Cinema Recall is going to take a slight little break. There's going to be probably some bonus content on our Patreon page, but we're getting prepared to do a Ghostbusters audio drama. So, yes, that's Mr. And then
I'm Dave, the mayor.
Dave's going to be on that podcast as well. I'll be playing Walter Peck.
Right on.
So.
Very nice.
Yeah. And that's really it there. And you can find all of our shows just by going to the site thatmomentin.com, clicking the podcast tab, looking up Cinema Recall. We are also on other platforms such as like Spotify and Stitcher and iTunes and Podbag. Just type in the words That Moment In and you'll see our podcast on there, along with other great podcasts such as TV Could Sleep Bad, Game Warp, and Asian Cinema Film Club.
Very nice.
Oh, and I forgot to mention, too, our Twitter handle is @cinema_recall.
So everybody get over there and follow them for all of the shows.
Thank you.
And Damien's still going with the Damien Riley podcast?
Yes, I am. That's what it is. My name's hard to spell, so hopefully you'll get there. But I'm on Twitter. The DR Podcast is my handle there. And it connects you to the website. And I enjoy doing a rundown review, kind of in the spirit of a monologue, but sometimes I have guests. I've had Vern on at least twice, I think.
Yeah.
I get the shows mixed up. But, yeah, so that's just my thing. I'm trying out, and it's fun. And so head on over. Have a listen.
And you could head over to my site or my YouTube to see whether the ABC Film Challenge is going to make it to YouTube or not. Or it's going to stay on the written side, with the first roundup video coming out at the end of August with all of the sci-fi movies I watched. which was a fun video to make.
Well, nice.
That's awesome.
But that's everything for everybody to go and watch in September. Let us know in the comments which ones you think were the best and the worst. And if you have any questions that you want us to answer, leave us a Twitter message. And we're going to answer it on the next round of Talking Stars, the October Horror Edition.
Ooh,
nice.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.